on 1116 SEN, The Whiteboard.
The Whiteboard with Robert Shaw and Shannon Burns. Robert, what have they done to us with...
What'd they forget?
You and Shannon.
We'll make up for that in a moment.
We will certainly make up for it as we welcome Shannon Burns, whose business card must be the size of a piece of project paper. Shannon Burns is Melbourne Football Club's welfare development coach and Casey's playing assistant coach, and on the weekend, I believe, a returnee to Shepparton to play for, was it Shepparton United? G'day, Shannon.
Thanks, Finey. Long-time listener of the show. Appreciate you having me on.
Brilliant.
Shorey. No, it wasn't Shepparton United. I have to correct you on that one.
It's Shepparton
Bears. We share the ground with Shepparton United, so that's it's a big mistake to say that I played for United instead of the Bears. Got to clear that one up early.
You don't share pubs. You go to separate pubs, so I doubt you'd be wanting to share anything other than the ground.
Yeah, exactly right. We alternate trainings, and the only time we cross paths when we play each other twice a year.
How did it go as a returning son?
We lost, unfortunately. We played Euroa, who are a pretty good side, top four side, and we were leading at half time. It's a very young side down there. There's a lot of kids under 22, and as young teams tend to do, they're a little bit inconsistent, and we fell away in the second half, which is disappointing.
Wouldn't have been lost on the fans and players that there was a dual premiership player, AFL premiership player out there, but it's a pretty high standard. I can beat you, though. I can trump that.
Yeah, how so?
Well, Mel Michael, coming back from a knee injury, played his first ever game for Ormond, but played in the reserves in D1 in the Ammo. So often did the D1 amateur reserves get a triple premiership player.
Yeah, no, he's got me there. I did enjoy going back, though, and always said, as a young bloke, that if I ever got the chance to return to the home club and play a game that I would. So I had two opportunities this year with the bye in the VFL, and took them both to go back and play for the club.
Mate, we'll get on to business. You've had a really extensive career, and I want to ask you about senior coaches and your observation. Obviously, you went through the 2004-05 period, the transition of Mark Thompson, where allegedly Cookie and Frank and them grabbed him and said, "Listen, you know, coach these boys. We'll worry about all the rest." And you've had the experience with Mark Neil and Neil Craig, and now you're having the experience of working with a very experienced coach. Gee, I've said that word in Paul Roos.
Chris Scott was there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you had Chris Scott, did you?
I did have him for 2 years as well, yeah.
And in his first year, he won it.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad start.
So that's four you've seen.
Yeah.
Where's it heading? And it's a broad question.
Where's coaching heading?
Yeah, where's the senior coaching? You've seen every different sort of component of senior coaching.
Mm.
If you're on that Carlton coaching panel,
yep.
Where's the issues with coaching teams now, you feel?
Well, coaching teams, I believe, is as much people management as it is actually coaching itself. And I think the clubs that can take away all the outside responsibilities that are anything but coaching, basically, of the senior coach, and give as much as his time to actually coaching the players and spending time one-on-one with the players rather than the media gigs that they have to do, the functions they have to attend. As much as you can relieve the senior coach of those duties and give him time to the players so he can actually have a relationship with the players, not just coach them, actually get to know the players, that's when players want to play for a coach and want to listen to a coach. I believe they're the coaches that get the best response
out of
their players.
So you saw that firsthand with Bomber? You saw that change right in front of you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was a stressed man in those early days just because of the extra responsibilities that come with being a senior coach that a lot of people don't see. They see the game day and they see him out in the training track, but they don't see the hundreds of other commitments that they have to do throughout the week. And I've got no doubt that started to weigh Bomber down. And, like you said, Frank and Cookie at the time just could see that happening and said, look, we're gonna strip this right back and you just get to know your players and get to coach your players. And the relationships from there they just skyrocketed, really, and the team started to come together.
We had I don't know if he was a former teammate of yours. You might have crossed somewhere on the freeway as he went from one club to the other, and you went from the other club back. Did you play with Jared Rivers?
I didn't play with Riv, but I've got to know Riv really well. Just Andrew Mackey was one of his best mates growing up, and obviously the Melbourne boys still keep close ties with Riv. So I play a lot of golf with Jared when we get the chance. The Melbourne boys and the Geelong boys sometimes have a bit of a competition against each other whenever our schedules match up, I suppose.
That's really interesting. So you'd had a long and fruitful career with Geelong. He'd had a long and fruitful career with Melbourne. Mm. But you weren't traded.
I was a free agent, so... Yeah.
So you crossed at the same time.
Yeah, exactly right, yeah.
Jared came into the studio and enlightened us on the steps he is taking to, in his post-playing career. By the way, that's not looking as though it's going to happen in the immediate future. He's playing excellent football. But he explained to us about going and doing coaching classes and doing it with Corey Enright, which was really interesting, really insight there, driving up to Melbourne. And what were you doing whilst you were playing football? Because it's clear in your role with Melbourne and with Casey that there is a plan for after football. What did you put in place? Did you put anything in place while you were at Geelong, or has all of this happened through the Melbourne Football Club?
I did my level 2 coaching at Geelong, so that was the start of it, I suppose. And mentioning Reeve, I actually coached with Jared Xavier College. The two of us were assistant coaches in the same year. So the year that he went to Geelong and I came to Melbourne, he'd been doing it the previous year, and our manager was the coach there at the time. So he got us along basically for every one of their training sessions and whatever game days we could attend. So we were assistant coaches together at school. And then the following year, I went to Oakley Chargers for the year and got to work pretty closely with some players that are getting games now, like Jordan DeGoey, Toby McLean, Jack Sinclair. So it's great to see them come on from their TAC Cup days into AFL footy so soon.
Step up now, Brighton Grammar coach. So what does that mean, being a coach at elite school level?
What's it mean?
In terms of the preparation.
That would be great preparation for them. I can remember they beat us about 4 years ago.
I saw you wincing.
They beat us on our home ground. I reckon it was the last time we lost on our home ground, about 4 years ago. And I remember Jared there. I don't know whether, I think Shannon was playing. But I certainly remember Jared. I remember the way he coached. They kept rolling the loose man back, releasing the seventh defender. You know, I thought that's got Rivers written all over it. So, yeah. It's interesting with your coaching, and like it's a diverse role you've got. You're welfare and development coach.
Yep.
Then you playing an assistant, right? Are you captain of Casey?
No, I'm not captain of Casey. Evan Pinoza is. He's been there for 9 years, so I don't have those duties. No.
Okay. Do you ever find yourself, you're coaching and the young kids and you're watching and you're calling out, push up, get over there. No, you've got to stand there and you're doing all those sort of roles. Do you ever forget to get a kick?
It's funny. It's funny you mentioned that.
Hang on.
I'm still playing
it. I haven't touched it for the quarter.
It's hard to give feedback when you don't get your hands on the leather yourself, so... No, you definitely look at the game differently. I look at it as a bigger picture now than I used to. You used to be so focused on your own role, yeah. And that's all you really were worried about. But now in this coaching role, I'm making sure everyone's in the right place. And funny enough, that if you get that to work, the ball ends up in your hands more often than not anyway, because the team's actually playing to structure. So yeah. It's been an experience that I wish I probably had have been a bit more open-minded as a player. To see that if you're not just purely focused on yourself, you can actually help yourself out by helping others.
Yeah, now, and to do that, I don't think there's that many secrets. Are you assigned a specific position? Is it easy to coach from a half forward, or is it better to look from a wing, or do they slot you back to half back where you got the look at... You understand what I'm...
What's
the best spot to coach from on the ground, do you feel?
Well, I'm not particularly sure where the best spot to coach is because I've never played down back. I really put myself in the defensive 50, I can tell you that much. But I feel comfortable coaching up forward just because I've played there for so many years and know how the forward line really works. So I guess in that area I feel most comfortable in giving instruction. But I also like to get through the midfield as well, just to have more involvement in the game. Sometimes up forward, the ball mightn't be down there the whole time, whereas you're playing midfield, you tend to be involved in the game the whole time.
Shannon Burns has joined us. He now has a dual role with both the Melbourne Football Club and Casey, their aligned football club in the VFL. Can you go to a game of AFL football, Shannon, maybe sit in the third tier up at the MCG or even the second level, look down on the ground and say, oh, they've things aren't right there. Mm. The structures are wrong. They've got some problems there. Football fans, even those of us who've gone for decades, don't have that level of intel or knowledge of what these setups are to be able to take a picture in our mind and know whether it's right or wrong. Can you do that?
Yeah. When you watch as much footy as we do throughout the week, it becomes a lot easier to spot when players are out of position. And you watch teams and how they play and you get an idea of where they usually set up. So I can understand why the average fan wouldn't be able to pick it up, because basically all they're watching is watching it on TV from broadcast vision, which often doesn't give you the down the ground footage, which basically is that's what we show the players more than anything. Rarely do we show broadcast vision. It's all down the ground, so you can see how one player's actions can affect a whole piece of play. So watching game after game after game and watching it down the ground footage, it becomes a lot easier to spot things when they go wrong for other sides.
And I think most of us would be able, say after a goal, when play is static, to say that seems right, that looks okay. But it's around stoppages and as the game is moving that the real subtlety of a coach and an understanding of setups and being behind the ball and being positioned right would, I think, need the expert eye that you've got. Shorey, how much has it changed in terms of watching a game of football? Now, you got into coaching pretty soon after you retired, but because you had so many injuries, were you exposed to it? Were you invited up into the box during your career?
Yeah, I was lucky because you're right, I finished at 26 and Shoots said to me, you can go and watch football for me. And this was when they're very rarely, Thursday to Sunday we're playing now. So I would leave an Essendon game and go and watch a game and then do tape. So we didn't have the availability of coaching courses that time. So he gave me the opportunity to self-learn sort of thing. And by watching so many games, and it just evolved from there. So it's a lot different now. There's no doubt about that. But, and even when I was an assistant coach for that eight or so years.
Just when you were watching other games, what were you looking for? Were you looking for how individual players went, or was there such a thing as team structure back then, or was it just 18?
Mark, we're only talking, you're talking recently.
40 years ago.
No, I was playing.
Well, I'm
but
saying
you're
just
talking
as
recently.
Now, as you finished playing, in that era, the early 80s.
Playing 82.
Yeah, I'm saying in the early 80s, when you started doing some opposition intel and going to other games, was it still full back on full forward?
No, it was one-on-one. It was still, there was very few of the tactics now, but it really started to evolve in my second stanza at Essendon when we had that great side. I would go and watch games, and very much about individual roles. How did Carlton use Craig Bradley? What are they trying to do with Koutafidis? We didn't quite work that out in 99, of course, but they were the sort of things. Which players were really important? She said, look at their strengths, which players are really important, and we took it from there. But, of course, we had a very good side, so the focus was really on the way we played quite a deal.
And, Shannon, in the modern game, you played with and against Gary Ablett.
I did, yeah.
And I would have thought a good starting point if you're trying to work out how to bring the other team out undone is start alphabetically. Ablett.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that is done.
I haven't worked that one out yet. So.
Is there a focus on good players? I think sometimes it's almost conceded. Have we got to a point with an Ablett or a Fife where you concede them the possession and try and work on what they will do with that possession?
I think it'd be silly to just concede, because you concede players like that are going to go from having a good game to an outstanding game if you let them do as they please. I think you need to have a bit of a team focus on players like that. You can't. I don't think one man can guard Nat Fyfe. I don't think one man can guard Gary Ablett. I think you need the whole midfield group working together, that if he's out of place for whatever reason, his opponent's out of place, that someone can step in and do the job for him. You can't be as naive to think that one person can stop a guy these days, I don't think.
You played 108 games, so I'm presuming you would have played 108 games with Gary Ablett. These are, the tough questions now. Are you comfortable with his ability, and have you seen it firsthand? Firstly, I'm only going on what people say, his capacity to play with injury. Have you witnessed that? And part B, did you think he would emerge as a leader of a team at some stage?
Gaz has played over 250 games, and yeah. I think if anyone that's played over 250 games of AFL football and hasn't played in pain, I think that you're kidding yourself, really.
Well, it's good to ask the bloke that's stood in the same on the ground with him. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Because it seems a bit more relevant than cherry picking from a million miles away.
Well, that's why it's good to hear that. Yeah,
brilliant. Yeah, no, I've seen Gary play through pain before. You play 260 games. I only played 140 games of AFL footy, and I played in pain. I'm certainly not the toughest of players, but there's, I believe anyone that's played over that amount of football has played in pain at some stage. I think it's just coming into scrutiny because he is the leader of the club.
Sorry to butt in, but I have to. Do you believe that sits comfortably with him? You played under Harley. You've played under Lingy.
Mm.
Your thoughts on Gazza as a natural captain?
I don't think it sat comfortably with him when he first went up there. Definitely not. He didn't have that connect with the players that he does now. He was an older player, and the majority of them were under 21, and he probably didn't quite still understand them on a personal level rather than a playing level. So I think early on that, and he had a lot of commitments as well when he first went up to Gold Coast. It's much like the coaching I was talking about earlier. He probably had too many commitments off the field to be worrying about the on-field, even though he was taking care of it as a player. To take care of it as a leader is a similar role to a coach at times. He probably didn't have the time early on in his days up at Gold Coast to take care of that. And I know that those commitments aren't anywhere near as much as they were in his first year or two at the club. And, yeah, I believe he's become a really good leader, developed into a really good leader. He wasn't necessarily naturally one, but definitely has
developed. Was that because he didn't have to be?
Yeah, well, that's right.
He didn't have to be.
Exactly.
Ling, Corey, Enright, just Chappy, all those blokes around him. We'll look after you. You just do what you do. And
we were blessed at Geelong to have so many different leaders across different lines. So that wasn't exactly right. Gary didn't have to play that role at Geelong. So he's gone up to Gold Coast. He's been put into a role that he's never been in before. And naturally, it's going to take time to develop into that role. And I believe that he has done that in the previous years, and I really do rate him as a leader these days.
Welcome back. We love the whiteboard because it gives Robert Shaw, myself, and hopefully you, the listener, an opportunity to probe and find out things behind the scenes. We call it back of stage at an AFL club that we assume, but we make a lot of assumptions as fans, and one of those assumptions, Shaw, is, no, they've just appointed Joe Blow as player and welfare development. And it's now a term as easily bandied about as forward line coach, ruck coach, or director of football, whatever that is. But tonight, let's find out exactly what welfare and development entails. Because it's did you have a chaplain at your club?
Yeah, definitely.
Would he have been welfare for one of a...
No, his role was one-on-one with... But people comfortable to go and talk to him before a game, and
so if anybody was welfare and development, would it have been he?
No.
Well, who was welfare and development?
I can't remember.
Because in 76, I doubt there was one. There was a boot starter.
Not then.
But would the chaplain have had that role back in the day for player welfare?
Yeah, probably did. Yeah.
And I said, Father Burns is in the studio. Well, I don't know what the role entails. Welfare and development are big words. What does it mean?
It does mean a lot of things. Welfare these days is basically everything outside of playing football itself. So you're getting the players' university courses organised. You're getting their living arrangements going well. You're making sure their lives at home are in order.
What are they? Bubble boys?
Yeah, well, with the scrutiny on them these days, you'd like to be able to make sure that their heads are in the right place off the field, because if they're not in the right place off the field, they're not going to give you too much when it comes to training and playing. So the role's getting bigger and bigger because the scrutiny on the game's getting bigger and bigger with social media, the amount of journalists. I think there's more journalists that cover the game than actual players. So there's just a constant pressure on these young men to be role models when a lot of them aren't at that stage just because their name's called out in the draft. So there's a lot of things that you've got to be across, and welfare tries to cover most of those outside of playing.
Yeah, I'll talk about the development.
Yeah, just on welfare, this is going to be... I'd have no problems in asking this, and I make a point that some of the things that sometimes come up in discussing football, they are racially based, but they're certainly not racist. And the racially based question is that Melbourne have had a number of Indigenous players in recent years, but more importantly, something that has been explored a little bit in recent weeks, it's not about Indigenous or non-Indigenous, but it certainly can be about traditional or more tribal players coming from tribal or traditional backgrounds rather than urban or country centre backgrounds. And Melbourne has had Liam Jarrah, mm-hmm. Austin Wanamiri, and these are footballers that have come from a very different world than the one that they are expected to be able to live in and then play top football in. Can you speak a bit about, not the specifics of Liam or Austin, and I'm not sure whether you had much to do with either of them, but the difficulties faced by traditional tribal Indigenous footballers as compared to just a kid drafted, and not an Indigenous kid, just any kid drafted into a football environment?
Yeah, well, I don't believe we'll ever fully understand how different the world that they've come from really is. But if you can at least try to educate the players to give them some sort of understanding on the different world, I suppose, that it is that they were raised in, it goes a long way to removing a lot of the ignorance that comes with the racism that comes out on game day or comes out casually in a conversation in the spa that players might realise that they're actually offending a player. So
that's within the club, actually?
Yeah, absolutely. We educate our players around our own players first and foremost, and then from there you'd hope that they'd also understand the stories of players from outside of their club. So we've got three Indigenous players at the club at the moment, and we make sure every year that they, and it's their initiative as well, that they have an hour and a half session where they run the session and let the whole group know where they come from, why they are, who they are, know everything about their background, their family, their tribes, and just why they think like they think. And basically it just removes all the ignorance, like I said earlier, that some people might have, and goes a long way to the playing group understanding our Indigenous boys a lot better.
And you would have witnessed that, and you know, I'm holding up the Herald Sun there, and it's only what you read. It appeared that your former coach did go through some difficulties with that. It was documented about the relationship at the time Mark Neild had with Davey, and these sort of, was it on those sort of understanding issues as you felt?
I'm not sure where the differences sort of came up. I wasn't really privy to the differences there. That was probably before I got to the club, what happened in those instances. But I know that we've only, the last few years, that we've really put an emphasis on our cultural awareness and the education of the playing group. And I know that those types of things are going to be really few and far between with our playing group, because there's a really good understanding and well-educated view on Indigenous boys these days from the Melbourne players.
Now, Cameron Smith can convert a try here.
Only if he goes through the two posts, Mark.
He didn't, but it really didn't matter, because it was actually after the game. The final hooter had gone. Canterbury 20, Melbourne 4. They did get on the scoreboard. And back to you, Robert Shaw.
We'll move off that. Well answered. The word, Mark's looked at welfare. I'll look at development. Development of the player as a player.
Yep.
Is that now based on teaching them, like, where to stand, their role within the team, you know, these key words, the structure you play with. And what's the balance with teaching them how to play the game? You understand what I mean? That could, I think these kids, from my perspective as a teacher, the building blocks of learning are about, you know, the steps taken to build them up to be able to play the game, teach the game, teach them how to play half forward or teach them how to play role. But to me, looking from an outsider at the moment, it appears to be that you're not you. The development focus is on role in team, structure, if you get a game, where you must stand, instead of the old teaching of how you play the game. You know, how do you read the play? How do you, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly part of it. The development side of things tends to be a lot more one-on-one with the player, more so than out in the track when the team's training. The main coaches will take care of that sort of business, but it's getting them in for a bit of one-on-one vision for their game, actually going over training again and making sure they understood everything that happened on the training track.
Yeah.
But also having individual sessions, which we call craft sessions, outside of training, that actually teach the player just the basics of the game I guess some players just don't have, for whatever reason, that don't come naturally to them, and whatever their deficiencies are in their game, you can work one-on-one with them and actually talk them through it. It might be marking practice, it might be ground ball technique, it might be spotting, working your way through traffic in a contest.
Yeah, no, it's good. So you're able to get out on the track and do additional sessions, because we do hear, you know, I don't know, see your role with the sports science.
It can be a battle at times with the sports science.
It can be a battle
at times.
That's a general comment from all clubs and all players that we've come in here. You want to get out and take watts for 50 overhead marks. That's too much. You're overloading him. So
yeah.
There is that balance you have to work with constantly, you feel?
Yeah. Oh, I certainly understand where the fitness staff are coming from with the loads and things like that. But if you were to ask me what we're here for, and that's to play football.
Well done.
And I believe that a big percentage of the training that you do should be football based. We can't just have these players out there flogging them on the track, getting their kilometres into their legs without a football in their hands, because you don't do that in the reverse. You don't get athletes out there and they go when they train, they go train and they run because that's what they do. Well, these guys are footballers. Let's get footballs in their hands and teach them how to play footy. And that's where at Geelong, that's how we went about our training. All our training would be, we'd have a GPS on the fitness staff would want. But we'd get all our drills done and you'd work as hard as you could in those drills, because the GPS numbers at the end of training would come up. And if you hadn't worked hard enough in the drills, well, that's when the running came on in the end. So they'd attach the running on after that. So that gave you motivation to actually work hard in the training drills rather than get the running done at the start, absolutely bug it, and then just attach a little bit of football onto the end. It just didn't make sense to me.
You need to get an app. There probably is one now, maybe not back in the day when apps didn't exist. Sort of like GPSstuffer.com, where you just pull out your app and you just can log in extra extra numbers on your GPS or on your step meter. Look, I've had a very busy day. Well, welcome back. The whiteboard is out. So, Kokkinakis and Mayer, opponents in the first round at Wimbledon, they have kick things off for Australian TV viewers, at least from an Australian perspective, and early going, I think, is predictably on serve.
Just off the SMS, Mark, Glenn in Highton is a good one. Shannon spoke about his friendship with Andrew Mackie, who's renowned and one of the great sledges, and also Stevie Johnson. Are they as good as they think they are? And part B to that, Do you believe there is out on the ground, me and Mark would know, is there a line that players, you've seen Mitchell, okay, you've probably got your own opinion, but is there a line that players won't go over, or is it all, it's on?
Well, I'll start with Mackie
for one.
I'd back that up and say that he is one of the best sledges in the game.
Clever? Is he a clever?
Very clever. I heard a good one of his one day. We were playing against North Melbourne down at Skilled Stadium, and we're winning pretty comfortably. I think we were 10 or 15 goals up, and Mac turned to Scarlett and said, "Is this a four-pointer?" And Scarlett, "What are you talking about? We don't get 4 points for this. This is a two-pointer, isn't it? This is a two-pointer, surely." Yeah. And I thought
they cut that, more than that cuts more than calling blokes.
Absolutely.
If I called you, can I say it, Mark?
A dickhead?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure you can. Everybody else does.
But that sort of stuff gets you. What did Stevie Johnson say to one bloke? He said, "Oh, it might have been to Murph."
Cash or credit.
Cash or credit?
Campbell Brown, yeah.
Campbell Brown. He said to Murph, "You got the front row. You got the front row
seats to the Stevie J show." Yeah. I do appreciate a good sledge, and the clever ones, more so than not. But Mackie was right up there. There's no doubt about that. And in regards to the Mitchell one, I believe he's a bit of a victim of just the constant media and just thrusting down of exposure that we've had to the Essendon saga. And I know a lot of times on the field you just say things without thinking of them, and sometimes, well, especially now with Essendon, the first thing that comes to mind when you think about Essendon is the supplement saga. So he's like, "How am I going to get him back?" In the heat of the moment, he's done that action, which I've got no doubt he regrets and he's apologised for, but sometimes in the heat of the moment, you just, the first thing that comes to your head.
I'll take you to the next level. Does he cop as much as he, is he a target? You know, the Geelong Hawthorn history, do your blokes, meaning Geelong, are they after Mitchell verbally? Or is he one that they...
Yeah, well, we target the best players. That's
right.
On the sledge, they're the players. You don't bother sledging.
But he gives as good back as he...
Oh, no doubt. We've had a good, healthy relationship with Hawthorn over the years.
No, that's good.
I'll leave it at that then.
Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're a side, obviously, that doesn't take a backward step, and Geelong never took a backward step with guys like Chappie and Mooney, and we've had a lot of these personal battles and physical battles taken out of the game, that scrutiny and match review panel, et cetera, et cetera. But there are, within games, guys that are still ferocious, I think. Who are some of the guys that, for Hawthorn, because of your close battles with them, you might have thought, you know, I'm just probably not going to say a whole lot to him during the day. Are there any guys still out there? Because back in the day, you find Plug or Lockett didn't get a lot of correspondence.
No, he didn't.
Oh, you're a bit safer out in the field, I think, these days.
You are safer, but are there still guys out there that you think, well, you know, I'll just leave him to his own devices. I don't really need to fire him up anymore.
There's players out there, I think, that play better when they're sledged. So they're the ones that you might want to avoid getting fired up.
Chilton Lewis is interesting because he's a really quiet person off the football field, a well-measured, quiet, very polite bloke.
Yep.
And some people can just, against North Melbourne for 3 or 4 years, I just pressed his buttons and he'd go. I still think he has this thing about playing guys against North. And
Well, you can be a nice guy off the field. Cam Mooney's a ripping bloke off the field, but he got on the field and he was reported more than anyone in the games.
There are players like Jordan, I think, who you can press the wrong buttons and you'll get a pretty powerful, ferocious and nasty type if you press the wrong...
Yeah.
If you log in the wrong combo.
It's a bit of a white line fever type.
Just still going down the same path. Yeah, we could go for two. This is fantastic,
great,
man. You're playing the half-forward flank for Geelong and, Ablett was there. And which player, can you tell the listeners and tell me and Mark, did you actually sit on your half forward flank and say, he's fair dinkum, he's underrated, he is a sensational footballer.
For the Geelong, for my Geelong days?
Yeah.
Underrated?
Well, not so much underrated, but they don't know about this bloke, but we do. He is a super player.
There was different players for different reasons. Max Rook's one that made me feel safer out in the ground.
Who's that?
Max Rook.
Yeah, right.
He was a player that would... Yeah. You just know that he'd be putting in the shepherd or putting in the block and putting the fear of God into some of those halfbacks, and he'd create a safer environment in the forward line for you just purely because of his presence. Moons was the same. Stevie was a player that saw the game better than anyone that I've played with.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You reckon he better than Enright?
Well, Talking forward line, I'd say he's his match in the back line. Boris can read the game, and that's what makes him such a good player. He's not necessarily one of the, well, he's a good defender, but it's more so he sees the ball coming in and knows where it's going before it gets there. It's hard to pin one player, but they all had some pretty special abilities to them. There was 12 or 13 All-Australians in that team in 1 year.
That's pretty good football. you leave Geelong, you go to Melbourne, and there's a world, there's almost a ladder between the two of them. One's on the bottom, one's on the top. And what is the same at all football clubs? That when you get there, you sort of think, you know what, doesn't matter. Footy clubs are footy clubs. Maybe even when you went back to Shepparton this week. What to you rings true about all football clubs?
You've got 40 blokes, you've got 30 blokes that you think are great, you've got five that you'd...
five you probably don't get on with.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Every group must have... It doesn't matter where you are, there's some weird cats out there.
Yeah, but I reckon they're great because they're the blokes you spend most of the time talking about. Like they give you stories to tell once your footy's done. You need a few nutters in there, I reckon, to look back on and say, what about this bloke? What about this bloke when he did this? So that's the beauty of football clubs. Not every bloke's the same. We've all got a common love for the game, but there's some very different personalities that come with every footy club, which is what I love about it.
There's something that I've asked before, and it's probably true. There are many supporters bleed longer and harder than the players. You are professionals. You have a profession to ply, and you also have lives to lead, where some supporters are so immersed in football for so long, it's hard to separate bad news on a weekend from life during the week. How do the guys, especially in Melbourne after, say, some of these losses, how do you get, just back into a good frame of mind? Because it is very sad when you walk off the field and you're downhearted, but you quickly bounce back. How's that done at a football club?
Well, when you say that it doesn't affect them for too long, I can tell you that's not the case, because football clubs are almost the worst place you can possibly be after a loss. It almost feels like you don't compare it to loss of life. That's not quite the right analogy I'm looking for.
It looks like a funeral sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah,
in the rooms afterwards, people don't talk.
Yeah, for lack of a better comparison, it can be like that in the rooms after a game, and the week at a footy club can basically dictate it on a win or loss on the week, and you're not allowed to be seen to be smiling. Fans think you're not allowed to have any fun. If you've lost, you should be straight-faced and learning to be getting better, apparently. Yeah.
But you need guys in the group that lift the spirits.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's where the characters come in. If you don't have those characters in the side,
then
the losses can weigh a team down. Well, at times I could be. You got to pick and choose. You can't be that bloke all the time, because then you become annoying somewhat to the coaches.
Hard job at Melbourne when you were there.
Well, that's right. That's right. You got to pick and choose your times when to be that person. If you're constantly that person, you're going to rub people up the wrong way.
Yeah.
But you need to be that person at times, or else it's just going to be such a depressing place to be, and everyone's going to, just going to be sad for the whole week. So
one last one from me, one from Robert, very quickly. So at both clubs, Geelong and Melbourne, who was never going to be that person? Who was the super serious... Well, just not really going to be the person to crack the joke, to break the moment.
Well, I'd say at Melbourne, and he's a great bloke. So
I'm not throwing
these blokes under the bus, but they are super serious and they love their footy. And Jack Grimes would be one that at Melbourne. I don't know. I'm going to go down.
No, that's good.
It's not a bad thing. These are guys that are focused and,
Oh, he is. He's absolutely focused to his footy. Everything for him is, if his footy's not getting the best, if it's not good for his footy, well, then he won't do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, nothing wrong with that. But he's not somebody who mucks around and cracks jokes. Geelong, was there such a person?
Geelong... No, we more had guys that just knew when to be serious at the right time and get guys into line. So Lingy wasn't necessarily a funny bloke, but he knew how to have a laugh, but he also knew how to pull guys into line and when the group needed to be serious, I suppose. So, I'd put him... They're both
Brad Otten's didn't strike me as a laugh-a-minute sort of bloke.
No, Otto's a ripper.
Tommy Harley wouldn't have done a comedy routine, would he, at the end of the footy trip?
No, Harles appreciates a good laugh, but to say he's funny would it would be a really long stretch, I'd say. But
now, Shannon, we're running out of time. Where's Highton? Is that Geelong?
Yeah, it's
in
Geelong, yeah.
I reckon you might get... I reckon it is Glenn. Glenn, your SMSs are really, really good.
But
I reckon he might be a teammate.
What's Glenn going to
say? Because he knows everything. Well, especially, who's Stokesy, the Werribee zookeeper? What did he...
when he got himself into a bit of trouble with... as we all know, he was a zookeeper.
Well, he came from Adelaide as a zookeeper.
Yeah, well, that was his job before.
Yeah, he came when he got himself in strife, he had to work.
Yeah,
oh, that's and good. He was a zookeeper.
Yeah, he was.
So this, Glenn, are you a player?
I'm not sure.
No, I remember when Matthew Stokes came to Geelong. We're going to wrap it up. When he came to Geelong, he was the article said the Adelaide zookeeper, and this is fair dinkum. The article said Adelaide, and then I've never read this before. Adelaide Zoo said he's been a great loss. Now, I've heard of Adelaide saying that players are lost, but Adelaide Zoo said he was a loss. Shannon, you've been brilliant. Welcome you back again.
Yeah, I'd love to come back on. I've got plenty more stories about the boys.
No, we want to talk about career next time.